Welcome back to another episode of the Main Quest podcast. This is, of course, the number one retro gaming podcast that can lock on to episode 78 to give you a deeper, fuller experience. As always, I am your host, Keith, and today is kind of a weird one, and I'll tell you why. So I had Daniel Carroll from the Mighty Retro Wars podcast on to help me break down the game in question today, and we had a ton of fun talking about Sonic and Knuckles. There's a lot of ribbing going on towards the middle of the podcast here. It was just a lot of fun. I always have a lot of fun talking to Danny when I'm on his show, and it was an honor to finally have him come on and talk about a video game with me. Problem is, he left. He was like, I've had enough of this shit. I'm tired of your fucking opinions. I'm out of here. Well, he didn't actually say all of that, but he's a busy man. He had things to attend to. He had other stuff to do that took priority over talking to me about a very old video game. And so the rest of the episode is just me. I will not be held accountable for the words that come out of my mouth without Danny here to stick up for Sonic. Because if you know me, things can get really dirty when I talk about Sonic. So sorry, Danny. You had your shot, man. There's nobody here to come to the defense of Sonic anymore. But let me tell you about some people that will come to the defense of my opinions for some reason. Well, sometimes they will, sometimes they don't. And those are the patrons. So if you head on over to patreon.com/themainquest, there's a couple different tiers that you can select from. And you are getting bonus episodes. You're getting episodes early. You've got access to two bonus series in a flash where I am playing for the first time, mostly very early 2000s Newgrounds Flash games and talking about them. And then, of course, it is the Main Quest Matinee as well, which is co-hosted by Ryan Yingling of List Off Podcast. And we are talking about your favorite video game movie adaptations and breaking those down and ranking them to definitively rank and select the best video game movies of all time. And mixed in with some of those tiers are, of course, shoutouts. And so here are some of the strongest supporters of the show, which are Kayla Jackson, Eric Guess, Ashton, David Palafox, Chris Copleen, Van Fernal, and Zero Sam. I thank you guys for your continued patronage. It really means a lot. And again, if you want to get access to all of that bonus content, you can head on over to patreon.com/themainquest. Check it out. Out of the 20 episodes on that feed, I'm sure you're going to find something you're really going to enjoy. And of course, the link to that is also in the show notes. So with all that little bit of housekeeping out of the way, I'm going to shut the hell up here and get to my conversation. Well, half of a conversation with Danny of Retro Wars Podcast about Sonic and Knuckles. So it's been a long time coming with the guest that I have on today. I've been on his show plenty of times. He is himself one of the largest retro gaming podcasts out there, and I'm very happy to have him on today. It is Danny, or as his lovers call him, Daniel Carroll of the renowned Retro Wars podcast. How you doing, man?
Oh, I'm not too bad. Thank you very much for having me on the show. It's a bit early, but I do my interviews in the morning, and it's not a problem. But I'm very happy to finally make a debut on your show. Thank you for having me on.
Yeah, no problem. I can't imagine having, you know, a good night's rest. Maybe you have a very nice dream, a sensual dream, perhaps. And then you wake up, and then you have to talk to me.
Oh, no. It's a joy. My only thing is that I've got the in-laws visiting at the moment. Because I've got the in-laws, and it means the little one's currently in our room, and I'm, like, looking at her going, stay the fuck asleep. Stay the fuck asleep. Don't you dare fucking wake up during the night. Fucking, I need a good night's sleep. I'm up at 10 to 6. Don't you dare wake up. No, but it's all good. And she slept quite nicely. So is it quite refreshed?
My kids will be coming back from a camping trip very shortly. So you're probably going to hear a lot of noise in the background. But, you know, whatever. This thing's got to carry on, right?
That's fine. It's fine. You won't hear my one. She just, yeah, she'll be hopefully in bed for another hour. So that's all good.
So let's just get the show on the road, and I'm going to cut to the chase here with a couple of these questions that I ask first-time guests. What is your history with video games as a whole? Like, when did the hobby begin for you?
When I was that's a good question. So when I was younger, I'm trying to actually work out what the actual how old I was. Me and my little brother Phil were at my dad's house, and he bought us a Mega Drive 2 or Sega Genesis, and it came with the Mega Pack, and he got us loads of games. And I remember I was playing with loads of my cousins, and we were playing Streets of Rage, and we got absolutely hooked playing the original Streets of Rage, and it went from there, really. That was it. I had a fuck ton of games to play. I had, I think, about 8 games to get me going, and then we were off. And then it really, when I started playing Sonic the Hedgehog, that's when I got so hooked on gaming, being able to play the speed. Although Sonic 1 wasn't known for speed, there were speed elements in Green Hill Zone, and that really set me going. And I've been a gamer ever since. A lot of my mates may have dropped off because I'm an old man now, but I still game. I game pretty much every day if I get a chance, and it's never going to die. The wife hates it, but she married a gamer. She had the choice. She decided to marry me, and I love video games. It will never die, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's crazy to think of how many kids I grew up with who played video games alongside me, and they eventually just kind of dropped off as we started to get older and older. And aside from my friend Aaron, who's been on the show before, he still plays when he can, but like I do the podcast, right? I'm playing games like sometimes 5 a week for the podcast. It's like, if I didn't have the podcast, I would probably still be playing that many games. You know, it's just, again, it's a hobby. It's something I do to relax most of the time. And it's just, I can't imagine not having them still, especially with how easy it is to get, because as we know, some of them are very hard to get, especially when it comes to monetary value as well. Mm-hmm. So I can't imagine not having them, especially since they are so plentiful. You know, there are video games everywhere. It's the best time video games.
It's definitely the best time when you compare when we were kids. I remember me and my brother having to save up all our pocket money for weeks and weeks and weeks for my mother to produce Lion King on the Mega Drive. God help our souls in that point. Yeah. But now you can get video games aplenty. You can literally just roll out of bed and play about 20 billion games whenever you want. Like even this game we're talking about today, that was my birthday. That was my birthday game. And that's all I'm getting for a long time. So you play it to death. You hope you make the right choice. Again, you hope you don't pick Sonic 3D Blast and go,
Well, no. I thought you were an apologist for every Sonic game.
No, I am not a fan of that game. Oh, I love my Sonic, don't get me wrong. I will defend him, but not for that one. No. I finished that in literally 2 hours, and I was like, well, that was pointless. Fucking hell. I had my birthday present gone, and it made me sick. So, yeah, not a fan of that one. But this one, did we play this to high heaven and enjoy every single moment of it and still do to this day.
Is it true you don't like the Sega Saturn because there was not a Sonic game released for it?
No. That's one of the reasons. And the reason I don't like the Sega Saturn is because the Saturnians, as they've dubbed themselves, were trying to infest one other podcast. And the host of that podcast was basically saying, no, I'm not playing a Saturn game because you Saturnians won't shut up. And then they basically saw, I'm a new podcast. And they tried to like basically spread their tentacles to my podcast and thought, maybe we can take advantage of this one. And that's the reason why. They're basically trying to take over the world. And I am flat down refusing to have any Sega Saturn games. I will play a PC version of that game so I don't ever have to touch that disgusting console. And yes, there was no mainline Sonic game. That angers me. It was absolutely ridiculous. Don't give me a combination thing or Sonic R. Don't come at me with that bollocks. But the fact is, you Saturnians are disgusting creatures. Stop trying to infest other podcasts. And if they're trying to infest this podcast, then you've got a problem because they'll take over. And it'll just become not a gaming retro thing. It'll just become a Saturn podcast. And that's it. Then you are only playing Saturn games and your life will be absolutely terrible.
Us Saturnians are basically like the priests that try to resurrect Cthulhu. I don't remember what the priest's names were off the top of my head, but the Saturn is basically a Lovecraftian nightmare, is what I'm getting at.
Mm. You're basically trying to bring forward the Dark Lord, and I will not have it. I will not have it, sir. You can absolutely do one. I will not. You want the Dark Lord in this show? I could hang up this call right now, because if you're trying to encourage me to resurrect this Dark Lord, no chance. But don't even think you're coming to mine. No.
I might give you shit on your own show, but as a guest here, I'm going to keep it to a minimum. So let's bring back some happy memories, some happier memories here. And I'm going to ask you what your favorite game of all time is.
Final Fantasy VII. Flat down, hands down. Nothing will ever beat that. Maybe there's a lot of nostalgia playing that game. I remember the first time I saw it in a magazine, I was like, what's this? It's number 7. Seems a bit pointless, me trying to, you know, not play number 1, not knowing the legacy that Final Fantasy is. And eventually I rented it, and it was the moment I even put that first start up, it absolutely blew me away. I had played Pokemon prior, so I had the idea of an RPG, but I was never a big RPG player. And essentially playing Final Fantasy VII, that was it. It started my RPG journey, and I have just been hooked on that ever since. I have played Final Fantasy VII so many times, I can complete that game backwards, and seeing like how it's gone, its legacy, its impact. Yes, I know there's Final Fantasy VI. I know there are other ones. But for this, this will always be my favorite game of all time. Things have come close, don't get me wrong. I've got games like Hollow Knight, The Last of Us. I've been up there, but nothing will ever topple this, in my opinion. Not Cloud and his adventures. Call that cliche, because not a lot of people will say that. But for me, there's a lot of nostalgia with that game.
I wouldn't call it cliche. So Final Fantasy VII is also my favorite game of all time.
Oh, good.
So I'm in
good.
The same fucking boat as you, man. And I think that's becoming less of a popular thing to say as time goes on. I think a lot of people look back at that game, and yeah, it has its problems, but I still fucking like it. It's okay to like a video game.
Yeah, it is. It is.
Kind of transitioning here into the game of the hour here. You know, you said in your history with growing up playing video games that Sonic was the first game where you're like, oh, this is it. Like, this is great. Mm. This is everything I could have wanted from a video game. And so you started there, but what is your history with the rest of the franchise?
So Sonic, the rest of the franchise is kind of a bit scattered. Sonic 2 and Sonic 3 were games which I never owned as a kid, because I came from a working class background. We didn't have the money available to us. And I only got to play 2 and 3 if I could borrow it from friends. That was all it was. Sonic, I never even owned Sonic 1 as a kid. Again, that was the same sort of thing. It was only if I could ever borrow it from a friend. But Sonic and Knuckles was mine. Sonic and Knuckles was my game. And Sonic Spinball, I had that as well. But Sonic and Knuckles was mine. I got that for my birthday. And I just fell in love with it. Like, don't get me wrong. I've had a big love for 2 for years, and I think it's maybe to do with Super Sonic. And it's only been, I honestly am going to say, the past few weeks where I've kind of sat there and gone, do you know what, Sonic 3 is the better game. And I've been blinded for that for many years. And I think a lot of it is to do with the person I used to borrow video games off was a bully, and I think that kind of put me, he used to really be a horrible person, it kind of traumatized me. So Sonic 3 was kind of linked to that, I think. And also the box art in the UK was terrible for Sonic 3, and I hated it, absolutely hated it. But the box art for Sonic and Knuckles is absolute fire, one of the best box arts I've ever seen in my life. And so playing Sonic and Knuckles, Like, I did, at the time, I didn't realize, oh, it connects to Sonic 3. I've got no idea. It wasn't until, like, you know, reading the guide and everything like that. I said, oh, it connects, but I haven't got Sonic 3. Shit. So it was a long time until I actually even did the complete thing. It was ages until I actually did it.
I'm sorry. I was just searching for the Mega Drive box art for Sonic 3, and it is... It's something.
It's the look at the UK version. You want the UK version. The
is it the one where Sonic is holding up four fingers and not three?
Is he? Let's have a look. He does. He's got four fingers up. Yes. With Knuckles giving him like a in the corner. It's a terrible box art. It's absolutely dreadful.
I've never seen this before. I've seen the Japanese version, which looks incredibly 90s.
The Japanese one follows the rest of them. They're all like that. But the North American one is so good.
So my thing with the Sonic 3 box art for North America, rather, is when I was a kid, and even up until I had to record my episode on it, I never knew what the fuck was up with the eyes in the corner.
Knuckles.
Like, I was like, who the fuck is just sitting there in the bushes watching Sonic? Like, this is, it's so, like, fucking weird. And like, but apparently it's supposed to be Knuckles.
It is Knuckles. How else could it not be Knuckles?
How am I supposed to know that? It's just a pair of eyes. Like,
because you like see Knuckles him within 10 seconds of the game. You see his, like, oh, there's Knuckles. Oh, shit, they're the eyes.
When is Knuckles ever in the game wearing a fucking ghillie suit and, like, hiding out?
He's not wearing a ghillie suit. He's just hiding. He's just hiding in a bush.
But just, like, I don't know. It's just incredibly random. It's, like, a weird choice. Like, you could have just not had it at all.
No, it's cool. It's better than the European version where he's just in the corner going, it's much better. It's cool.
Yeah, I guess so. I do like how in the U.S. box art, Dr. Robotnik is basically going all Vietnam and setting everything on fire.
Which is insane. You look, you know, as a kid, I didn't really think much of it. But when you look back at it now, I was like, holy shit, this guy is, he's horrible. And the amount of people he's probably, there was no one living there, but the amount of animals he's probably killed at that point is insane. And the fact that Knuckles just goes with it and goes, ah, fuck it, it's fine, not a problem, don't worry, mate, you just set up part of my island on fire, I'm not going to have any problem with that. And he's like, hey, he's killed so many animals, he's a horrible human.
Yeah, I've always thought of Robotnik as kind of like a weak villain. I think he gets worse as the series continues, because he just becomes kind of like a joke. In of himself,
yeah, he's
in
always
my opinion.
Kind of meant to be like a bit of a joke character, but this is the game I think when he does his best work, Sonic 3 and Sonic and Knuckles. He's definitely at his best at that stage, because if you think of the levels he goes to, like, fuck Bowser didn't have a death egg. This he does.
True.
Jesus Christ, and he's a one-man wrecking army.
Yeah, so you weren't able to attach anything to this when you were a kid then.
Well, when I had, you know, I basically, because I didn't have Sonic 3, and it was one of those that I'd have to get someone to borrow it, and I wasn't going to borrow it from the lad down the street, I basically just played Sonic and Knuckles to absolute death, and eventually when I managed to get hold of a copy off a friend, then I could do the whole thing. So it was absolutely ages until I, you know, did the lock-on technology. I could do my own games, because you can put that on top and play random the special stages. Apart from that, no, I just had to play Sonic and Knuckles and just enjoy the ride, which I did. I had no problem playing that again and again and again.
Yeah, so I was fortunate enough to have Sonic 3. Like, my personal history with this game is not that much different from what I talked about on the last episode. I mean, this came out in October of that same year. Was that 1994, I believe?
Yep.
And I got Sonic 3. I didn't get Sonic 3 when it released. It was probably a couple months later. I remember playing it a lot over the summer.
Yeah.
And so when I heard about Sonic and Knuckles, I was like super excited about it, because the way people were talking about it and the way that this was not a numbered Sonic game, like, they ditched the numbering convention, right? Mm-hmm. It seemed like this was going to be like a huge, big step in the franchise. Like, it wasn't going to be Sonic 4. It was going to be something completely different.
Yeah.
And then the fact that you could attach, like, the other Sonic games to this, and you could just have more video games, Like, that was fucking amazing. Like, I like, what wasn't there to be excited about, right?
Yeah, it was all new and cool.
I mean, as it turns out, like, it wasn't, like, that great, but it did give me a ton more life out of Sonic 3, that's for sure. Like, I don't think I ever played Sonic and Knuckles by itself because it was, you know, revealed that you were supposed to attach both cartridges together and have like an entire game. So I don't think I ever played it on its own except for playing it today.
Yeah, there's poor old me sitting there. Ooh, boo-hoo. I've got to play the original. I've got to play this by myself.
Well, again, I was fortunate enough to have an older brother who's almost a decade older than I am. So,
well, that makes it easier. Yeah, definitely. Right.
Yeah, he was bringing stuff into the house, and I didn't really purchase games. I wasn't quite old enough to have a job yet. I was getting some allowance here and there, and sometimes the allowance would totally be bypassed if I was like, "Hey, mom, dad, I want to get this game," and they would just get me the game.
Yeah, fair enough. Go for it.
As I've learned on this show so far, some of the games that I chose, I probably would have been better off not getting those.
You don't know as kids, and you haven't got the internet. Right. That's the problem, because you haven't got the internet. You go, okay, I've made a grave error.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my brother was like reading all of the gaming magazines back then, so he kind of knew what was going on, whereas I just didn't. I just wasn't in any of that, you know. So. To the development history here for Sonic and Knuckles. Mm-hmm. Sonic and Knuckles is a platformer developed by Sega Technical Institute and published by Sega. I don't have a lot to add here that I didn't say on Sonic 3. Essentially, the TLDL, too long didn't listen. Mm-hmm. This is the exact same team of Hirokazu Yasuhara, White Collar Criminal Yuji Naka, and Hayao Nakayama. As far as the soundtrack goes, I really don't know what the deal with it is. On the Sonic 3 episode, I talked about how there were multiple hands all over that soundtrack, especially with the fallout with Michael Jackson. But looking at the team that composed this versus the one that composed Sonic 3, they're completely different, except for Yoshiaki Kashima. Like, he's the only one that returned. So I don't know what happened. And when we talk about the music a little bit later, I've got some things to say about that.
I didn't mind the music of this, yeah, but it hasn't got the legacy when it comes to the whole Michael Jackson bullshit. That's not there. So you can listen to all this music, and it's completely fine. You're not having that interrupted by anyone. I love 16-bit music. I think they're great. And the Sonic ones always get me hyped. Like, really sure. Get me hyped.
And as far as the development team goes, STI broke up into two groups, with the majority of the Japanese developers working on Sonic 3 and Sonic & Knuckles. And basically due to, like, mismanaged time, a deadline, and marketing pressure, Sonic 3 wasn't finished. So they released that as is, and the rest was marketed as the game that we play today, Sonic and Knuckles. You know, and as we've talked about in our personal histories, could attach other games to Sonic and Knuckles via a slot on the top of the cartridge, which was marketed as quote unquote lock-on technology, which was basically a way to hide the fact that this game was like the first DLC before like that term was even invented or was even commonplace.
Yeah, it was. It was the first ever DLC. It's a weird one, but it did the job. Again, I'd never seen anything like that in the past. It was like, wow, this is all brand new and cool. And it was like, oh, you could put other stuff on it. It was a very new and exciting thing, and it just looked so easy. Mm-hmm. You know, there was nothing additional I had to pay for. I was like, just put it in. I was like, yes, you just put it in. I was like, oh, Awesome. Love it. Great.
Well, besides, you know, dumping like the same amount of money as like a regular game, you don't have to buy anything. But it worked with Sonic 2, right? And all you do is get, it basically puts a Knuckles sprite into Sonic 2 and you can play the game as Knuckles.
Mm-hmm.
Sonic 1 doesn't really work. All you get is like those, the 3D bonus stages where you like are running around the sphere. But that's
yes.
it.
Yeah,
like,
that's it really all you doesn't. Get. Nothing too special. You just get one extra thing. Unless you put Sonic 1 in, and Sonic 1 you get like unlimited ones. Completely, absolutely unlimited. You'll just, could it just makes random ones every time.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it was like the algorithm had something in like the millions or something. It's like, that's wild how many patterns that they can make.
Insane. Absolutely insane.
There was a separate interview that I read for the development of this game. It was an interview done by the career criminal himself, Yuji Naka, in 1997, about the end of the development cycle for Sonic 3 and how the team were kind of brainstorming ideas on how to get the rest of the stages onto the Sonic 3 cart through like different revisions. And that's kind of where the lock-on capability came into play, because it was an idea that STI messed around with when they were developing Sonic 2, because Sonic 2 apparently was really taxing on the hardware, and like they basically filled that entire cartridge up with what Sonic 2 actually was.
Yeah.
But they didn't go on, obviously they didn't use the technology there, and so they scrapped that idea but then brought it back for Sonic and Knuckles. And so yeah, with Sonic 3 attached to Sonic and Knuckles, you could play what was supposed to come out. And I think, so I crunched some numbers here. It's funny you mentioned that you're like, oh, you don't have to pay extra, you know, for like you do these days for DLC.
Mm.
But for what would be $100 back then for both of these games, in 2023 money, you would be paying $206 for both games. So,
wow.
And people are complaining that their video games are $70. It's insane to have to pay $100 for both of these games to get the complete experience, but
that's insane. What it was.
And then there was the last thing I want to mention here was this contest that I vaguely remember, this MTV contest that was called MTV Rocks the Rock.
Yeah, I watched it. You sent me the video, and I never seen that. I was like, oh my God, that is ridiculous. That's so 90s.
Listeners, I implore you to, maybe I'll put it in the show notes. It's equal parts cringe and like also kind of endearing on behalf of the players that are there in this contest. I guess I should mention what the contest is, right?
Yes, add a bit of context.
Essentially, a tournament was held all over the world in which players were competing for a grand prize total of $25,000 and also the title of, quote, world's greatest video game player.
That's a big title. That's a big title to get.
The preliminary matches were held like in certain spots around the world, and the winners of those preliminary matches were flown out to San Francisco, where the final round, for whatever reason, was held at Alcatraz?
Yeah, of course you do.
Like, I don't understand. I don't understand why the tournament was specifically being held at Alcatraz, because the movie, The Rock, didn't come out for like another 3 years, I think.
Nope, it did not. It's very strange.
Maybe they knew playing a Sonic the Hedgehog game was kind of like going to prison.
Imagine that. You playing Sonic, you're off to prison. No more for you.
It's only fitting that Yuji Naka was there, because he got a little bit of taste of prison before, you know, last year.
Before he decided, oh, I better make it real. I better just see what it's actually like, and I'll make my own appearance there. Poor guy.
The winner for the tournament was this guy, Chris Tang, which I went down a rabbit hole after watching this video, and I was reading and listening to interviews that he did, and he was actually like in the tournament circuit for like a while before he actually did that thing with MTV. And he really talks about the experience in depth, and it sounds actually more interesting than it comes off as. And eventually he actually got a job with Capcom. He worked on a lot of Capcom games doing writing for them. So if you played a Street Fighter game after like 1995, he did the writing for it.
That's cool. Yeah. That's his career sorted, isn't it?
The thing is, it's like it's a weird tournament to have with Sonic and Knuckles. Because, like, you know, we have things like Evo today where it's like the biggest fighting game esport out there, or whatever you want to call it, fighting tournament.
Yeah, Evo is huge.
Yeah.
And, like, that's how you can make your name. Like, we, you know, name drop. I had Justin Wong on our show. And it was like speaking to him and his experiences about Evo. And it's like, he's a goddamn legend. And he had, you know, he's gone on to do his own thing now, but his career in video games is just because of Evo. That's what got him. That's what made him like world famous.
Yeah. The conceit of the tournament was to just collect as many rings as possible, which
that's mental. I'd do that.
Yeah. Like I could do that. Like it seems so easy, like on the surface, but I guess maybe like, I don't know, when you have a bunch of cameras and stuff and people are watching you, maybe, I don't know, maybe it's a little bit different.
Maybe the pressure's on. God, I know. Yeah. I did it. I've got a time limit. If I haven't got a time, I'll just get every ring I want. I'll just walk it. I'll walk the whole thing. I've got 10 minutes to get every ring in the stage laughing. Not a problem.
Well, the interesting thing is that he said that in order to practice for the tournament, he played the first stage of Sonic 3 continually. And that was basically what they had to do in the preliminary rounds. But in the final round, they attached, because they had Sonic and Knuckles wasn't out yet. And they just knew they were going to be playing the next Sonic game. They had no idea exactly what it was going to be. And that's also basically on MTV is when they revealed that you could attach Sonic 3 to Sonic and Knuckles.
Yeah.
Which none of the contestants knew about. And so during the final round, they had to play as Knuckles on, I don't remember what Sonic 3 stage it was.
It was one of the base ones. It was, Launch Base Zone.
Launch Base, yep. And he had to play as Knuckles. And because he was so familiar with Sonic 3, like whether he was Knuckles or Sonic didn't really matter. But I guess it freaked the other contestant out. And so that's kind of how he got the upper hand. It's really interesting. It really is a interesting deep dive that you could do if you got time. Finishing up the development here real quick. Sonic & Knuckles was released worldwide on October 18th, 1994. And because Australia, I guess, may as well not be part of the planet, it released a month and a day later than the worldwide release date. For the Genesis and Mega Drive. Review scores for context. Famitsu gave it 30 out of 40. IGN gave it a 9 out of 10. Game Informer gave it a 9 out of 10. EGM gave it 9.25 out of 10.
Mm-hmm.
And Brandon Corley on Google gave it a perfect 5 out of 5. Also stating, quote, number one, steady hand. One day, Kim Jong-un needed new heart. I do operation. But mistake. Kim Jong-un dies. SSD very mad. I hide fishing boat. Come to America. No English. No food. No money. Daryl give me job. Now I have house, American car, and new woman. Daryl save life. My big secret? I kill Kim Jong-un on purpose. I good surgeon. The best. End quote.
What the fuck? What the fuck? So, what the fuck's that in a review? That's just stupid.
Honestly, I don't even know why we're going to continue the episode. I can't put together a better review.
You
myself,
can't top
honestly.
That. Yeah, literally, no. It's done.
are going to, though, continue with some reviews of some sort. I'm bringing back a certain segment to the show that has been gone for a very long time. I have given it a catchier name, and I call it Retro Recollections. And prior to an episode releasing, I ask everyone out there on the internet what they think about the game in question. And first, we're going to start with a patron of the show, thank you, Chris Copleen, who said, "It was cool when it came out, since it had the lock-on technology. It's a brilliant stroke of marketing, but as a game itself, it's fine, I guess. But there's no point in playing it unless you have Sonic 3. If you were to own this and not have Sonic 3, there were far worse options out there. In parentheses, like Sonic 2. But it would feel incomplete and like something was missing because it was."
He's a piece of shit. He's a piece of shit, Chris Copleen. He's like, he knew I was coming on just to bait me. All right, Bougie. He has like fucking six consoles when he was growing up. I didn't. I had one. I had one games console. I was a poor motherfucker. I get what
no
I'm
given. Sonic 3.
No Sonic 3. I get what I'm given. I'm not going to go to my dad and go, "No, father, thank you very much for this Sonic & Knuckles game for my birthday. I really appreciate this. I know you haven't got the money yourself, but good sir, fuck off. I want both. Otherwise, get out of my sight. How dare you?" Just fuck off.
What, the only thing he was missing was the comment about Sega Saturn or something.
Oh, we can stick that up his arse as well. Stick that with the sun. Actually, he probably doesn't stick it up his arse. He probably sits there and poos one out because it's already up there. It's so far up his arse, it's taking over his brain.
I mean, he hasn't said anything that we hadn't said already. So everybody knows how I feel about Sonic 2. Listen, Danny, you're here for a reason, and you're here to stick up for Sonic, okay?
I will stick up for Sonic. I will fight the good fight. I really will.
The next retro recollection here is from Super Garbage Day, and this also could be from patron Hank Parker, Pro Bass Fisher. I'm not sure. It could be Mr. Miller as well. Either way, they say this was the best entry, in their opinion. And I think there's a lot of arguments out there about whether, you know, Sonic 2 is the best in the franchise, or whether Sonic 3, or this. It's kind of all over the place. Coming into, like, replaying these again, I thought the consensus was that Sonic 2 was the best in the franchise, from what I heard.
Look, for years, I thought Sonic 2 was the best. But the more I've thought about it, and again, recently, I've been having a real thing, I think Sonic 3, I think you have to look at both games combined. Sonic 3 and Knuckles is the better game. It is the better game. If you're going to look at them separately, you know, Sonic 2 is then obviously a complete package compared to a Sonic 3 or a Sonic and Knuckles. And you could play, yeah, it's complete. You can do the whole thing. But as a, when you add both games together, Sonic 3 and Knuckles is a better game than Sonic 2, hands down.
I mean, I don't want to give my opinion away on this game. Everybody knows how I feel about Sonic 2 and, to an extent, Sonic 1, although I think with some hindsight and having played the rest of these games, I think I should need to give Sonic 1 a little more credit than I did, but I would take Sonic 3. I think even without Sonic and Knuckles, Sonic and 3 feels like a full game, even though it is pretty short. But you got two more here. Liquor Store Arcade says, "It was good to see a solid expansion of the Sonic world at the time it released, but I couldn't help the feeling that it would be downhill from that point."
Wow. Jesus, that's a bold statement, isn't it? He's not happy. I think he needs to go see a therapist.
They had a premonition. They had a premonition of what would come on the Dreamcast, apparently.
Yeah. Well, he knew something. He saw the Xbox and PS and went, "Oh no, that Sonic's coming. Oh dear."
And then we've got DMC PCRT on Twitter. That's hard. That's a mouthful. That is a tongue twister. They say, "The far superior half of the whole game. Sonic and Knuckles has an almost perfect sequence of stages, besides the awful Sandopolis. Still, it's better than Carnival Night." I agree with that.
Yeah.
better pacing, better music. You can also play as Knuckles in this part. Biggest con is losing the save feature.
Oh, for yeah, sure. You do, don't you? Yeah, for sure. Definitely. Jesus, I forgot about that. I forgot about you completely lose the save feature.
Yeah, that was one of the biggest things I was kind of pissed about, because I did not play this in one sitting. I had to come back to it. When I was exiting, and then I came back to it later on. I'm like, where's the file? Is there a file select? Where, like, oh no, you just start the game from the screen. Oh fuck! Like, oh okay.
Yeah, okay. This is a little bit different. Go. Oh shit! I'm not used. Well, again, I didn't know what I was on about. I just took it as it is. But yeah, I can imagine those playing Sonic 3. They're like, where's the save file? I don't understand.
Yeah. So. I mean, technically, yeah, then I did have to sit through an entire session and play the entire thing from front to back. But let's talk about that play session, right? We start with the story and plot. On the Sonic 3 episode, I talked about how thin the plot overall for like all of these games is. But with that in mind, I actually liked the approach that Sonic 3 took to its storytelling.
I thought it was great. I thought the storytelling was fantastic.
And it's kind of like... That kind of obviously it carries on because they're pretty much like the same game.
Well, essentially, they tell the story with no text. Like, everything is told through visual cues, and it's great. It basically tells the story of how Robotnik has teamed up with Knuckles, is trying to get the Death Egg back, and then fails to get it going again. It crashes, and it has to start all over again. The prophecy that the Echidnas had years before, that someone will be after, there'll be a battle for the Master Emerald some sort of hedgehog creature with a man. It was great. The cues in there, when you actually sit there and look at the in-depth story, it's better than any Mario game. It's
absolutely,
you look at any, there's barely any story in a Mario game. This is awesome.
Yeah, and when you take into context of the first two Sonic games, there's nothing, like, unless you read the manual, there's nothing that you wouldn't be able to tell what the hell is going on and why you're doing what you're doing.
Correct.
Sonic 3 and Sonic and Knuckles, like you said, it has very good transitions with the state. Like, the transitions to the stages tell their own story, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, they even do. If Knuckles doesn't show up, there's a reason why you're going from Act 1 to Act 2. And then from one zone to the next.
100%, the transitions make it obvious, but a lot of the detail in the background help tell the story. Look at the fact when you do Lava Reef Zone, you're getting closer and closer to seeing the Death Egg. I was like, that's so cool. You know, it shows how big the zone is and how powerful this thing is. It's awesome. The storytelling is absolutely incredible.
As far as the gameplay goes, I mean, this is it's a Sonic game. You know, everything from Sonic 3 is back. You get the flame shield, the lightning shield, water shield, invincibility, running shoes. You know, we talked about the bonus stages. Those are back, including the giant sphere that you run around to collect the Chaos Emeralds. I've talked about all these games ad nauseum at this point. It's the fourth one. There's not a lot of changes in between all of them. What is it about the gameplay mechanics that you like about the Sonic game so much, especially Sonic and Knuckles in particular?
I think when you look at how Sonic had developed, Sonic had the spin dash and basically a lot of it was just to do with his speed and his jumping. But in this game, they decided, obviously, well, as Sonic 3, adding the fact that you had the Insta Shield was awesome. The fact they had the three items was so good, like the lightning, the fact you could do the double jump, then it also helped you get more rings. The fire shield, which made you impervious to fire, and the fact it had an actual, like, a forward dash attack, and the bubble attack just went boom, 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 which was so much fun to bounce and see how high you can get with it. Use it as a bouncing attack, but also you can just go into the water and it wasn't a problem. It was great. And I know, yes, Tails wasn't in this game. He was only in Sonic 3, but if you had them both, you could do that. But having Knuckles as well as an actual, not just a copy and paste character, he was one you could just do your own thing. Yes, he couldn't jump as high as Sonic, but he could climb. He could glide across the stage, and he could go to sections of the map which no one else could, which was absolutely awesome. The fact that he could go to different parts of the world was awesome. Obviously, I was repeating myself, but it was, because it made this game bigger than it actually, this game is huge. And so I actually think, oh shit, okay, Sonic and Tails have just done this whole level, but Knuckles has his own little side path. It's so good. Like, everything in Sonic 2, it's like worked, what can we build on here to make this game actually go faster? Because that's one of the common complaints, is that in Sonic 1 and Sonic 2, speed is always pushed as a big thing for Sonic, and there aren't actually a lot of places where he can go really fast, but in Sonic 3 and then Sonic and Knuckles, there is always spots where he can go, where he can absolutely fly and use those physics to the absolute utmost maximum. And it's not just that, but it's not just the way they handle. In every single zone against, well, Sonic 3 included, but talking particularly about Sonic and Knuckles, they always try a different thing, something new to the party. So in you look at the first level, for example, you've got the mushrooms you can bounce on, which have their own physics, and then you have the device where you can kind of lever yourself up and go, something new every level. And I can't think of many other, I was trying to think of many other video games that does this, where every level has their own little unique gimmick. That's so cool. That's so good. Sandopolis has the sand and has the ability to stop the ghost coming. Like Flying Battery, you're basically swinging from one pillar to another. Actually, rather than doing a stupid jump, you're actually using the momentum. Like actually, you know, I can't do that because I'm too fat and big, but actually using the monkey bars, it's just, they really thought, how can we make Sonic's movement the best it can be? And they did it, in my opinion. They really did. Again, you compare it to a Mario game, all Mario's really got are his powers, but he can mix with the environment somewhat. But in the Sonic games, in these two games in particular, everything you can mix with, there's something to do with that environment, which just makes it holy shit. And look at the Death Egg. Look at the Death Egg. You're playing with gravity. That's just, it's insane. It's so good.
In regards to a lot of the gimmicks that they put in the Sonic levels, because you're like, well, I can't think of any other game that does that. You just did an episode on Earthworm Jim.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a game gimmicky that gives you a new gimmick every single level. The only thing with Earthworm Jim is that they implement it horribly. Like, nothing in that game is intuitive. Whereas here in Sonic, the mechanics are intuitive. You see, again, you see like the seesaw or whatever you want to call that thing in Mushroom Hill Zone. You're like, oh, I have to grab onto this. And then it's just like, oh, I just press down and he just keeps going up or whatever. Or you see the spinning thing in Ice Cap Zone and you attach yourself to it. And you're like, oh, okay, this is like momentum based. I just need to toss myself up. You go on Earthworm Jim and then there's like that weird crystal in like the third stage or something, like that green crystal. You don't know what the fuck to do with that. there's nothing to tell you what you have to do. There's nothing intuitive about Earthworm Jim's gimmicks and stuff. So
you just have to kind of go with it and pray to God.
Yeah, like to Sonic's credit, the gimmicks work, but also I think like, in the case of Mushroom Hill Zone, and to what you said about how this game and Sonic 3 finally had good enough level design that they figured out how to actually go fast if you stay on the main path. Mushroom Hill Zone like has one of the gimmicks where the game just stops dead because you have to use I keep calling it a seesaw. I don't know if that's what it's called.
Yeah, it's kind of like a seesaw pulley machine. I don't mind it though. It's like a few seconds. It just, you know, because you can't have constant speed the whole time, because otherwise the game would just be this big speed fest and you're not getting to see the environment. But having bits where you can just slow down for a minute, again, gets you to appreciate the speed bits when they do come back.
Because that's what I appreciated about Sonic 3, where it didn't heavily rely on those gimmicks. It had some of them, but a lot of them had to do with like platforming, and something like the pulley is not really platforming. You're just hanging onto something and not really doing much of anything.
You are. You're using a pulley. You're learning about physics. You're learning how physics works. Yes.
And then, you know, you talked about Sandot. So the thing with me in this game is that the levels are so fucking big.
They
that is
are.
Kind of annoying.
They're massive. No, it's not. What do you mean? They're annoying. Dude, it's awesome.
In theory, yes. Like, oh, yes. These are giant levels, intricately designed. But, like, I don't know. Like, it's hard for me to believe that the exact same team from Sonic 3 came and made this one, because it just felt like they were like out of ideas, or they were tired or something. Like,
what do you mean? What do you mean they're out of ideas? It's awesome. It's so good.
The fucking stages just meander so much. And the thing that really ruins it is that there's a fucking timer. Like, there's always an optimal path in every Sonic game, right? There's always one path that's like the best path. And if you ever fall off like the path or whatever, if you end up deviating from it, that's the word I was looking for, the punishment can be pretty harsh. And I feel like it's at its harshest in this game because of that fucking timer, because you get lost so easily. This is the first Sonic game that I've played for the show where I ran out of time.
What do you mean you ran out? I've never run out of time. Ever. Ever.
I think the first stage that happened on was Sandopolis. And then I think the other stage was maybe like Death Egg or whatever it's called.
What were you doing?
I don't remember which one. Trying to fucking finish the level.
No bullshit. I've had one time out. One, because I was looking for rings, literally trying to get all... This is in Sonic 2. That's the only time I've had a timeout.
What's the stage with, like, the transporters? It's near the end of the game. I think it's the last level.
Sky Sanctuary Zone.
I think it might be Death Egg, where you, like, you stand on, like, a platform, and then, like, it takes you along this path, or whatever. Just kind of, like, aimlessly,
the path.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's Death Egg. Whoop, 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 whoop,
yep.
Whoop, 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 whoop,
I ran out of time. I was like, what? I got to one of those. I got to one of those pads, and you have to use it, and the timer still ticks down while you're using it. I'm like, you have to be fucking kidding me.
What do you mean? Because if it was smaller, you'd be going, oh, this game's too short. This game's not long enough. I want my money back.
That's not true. No. That's not true. Sonic 3 was very short, and I fucking love that game.
No, it wasn't. Sonic 3 was not very short. It's like you could combine Sonic 1 and Sonic 2, the Green Hill Zone and Emerald Hill Zone, combine them together, and they're still not as big as the first level in Sonic 3. What do you mean it was too short? Bullshit.
I think in Sonic 3, it's a lot easier to stay on the optimal
path.
Were
you playing one-handed? What were you doing?
Listen, how I play my video games and how I masturbate are my personal thing here, so...
I wasn't talking about masturbation. You brought that up. I was just saying, were you playing one-handed? You know, just to try and have a challenge. You brought the smut into this. I just... No! People will be sitting there. There's going to be half of people on this listening to this going, well, I think he's got a valid point. I think these levels are too long. Then there's going to be other people going, what are you smoking? Are you smoking the ganja? There's no chance. These levels are great. And when you bear in mind, it's meant to be half of a complete package. You want your levels to be quite long when you're playing Sonic and Knuckles, because if it's over in 10 minutes, I know that's how long you get. But if it's over in 2 minutes, there we go. You'll be like, oh, I've finished in an hour. Can I have a new one, please?
Yeah, no, I wanted every one of these levels to be just a little bit shorter. Like,
No.
Mushroom Hill Zone is fine, but again, the pulleys annoyed the fuck out of me. Like one of the best stages was Lava Reef, in my opinion.
Incredible.
You're going full speed, and then all of a sudden you just slam into a door, and you're like, well, now I have to stop and find this button so I can open this door.
Yes, again, it's to basically make you appreciate the speed bits, because if you were going speedy the whole exact time, you're not going to be, you're just going to go, oh, it's just about speed. But then when you basically do a slower bit, you can go, okay, let's have a look and go, okay, let's just appreciate this because I want to get back to the speed bits. I want to get back to the speed bits. The speed bits are fun. It's like having too much cake. If you just eat cake the whole time, you're not going to be able to appreciate the cake you've eaten. Just slow it down. Maybe go to the toilet for a little bit. Have a drink.
It's less annoying than like Sonic 1 and Sonic 2, where you are punished for going as fast as you want. This isn't as bad, but it still stops the game dead, and I feel like Sonic 3 was one step forward and Sonic and Knuckles is one step back.
No, you're one step forward and one step back. No.
I mean, this is why you're here, Danny.
Like, Sandopolis is the only one I'll hear that maybe it could have been a little bit shorter. The only one, but not because of time, right? I'm not hearing that bullshit argument. And there's one mini-boss which can do one and suck a dick. That thing went on far too long. But apart from that, I love the pacing of this game. I love the storytelling. How can you say Lava Reef went on too long? What?
The only stage...
Marijuana. It's flying over from...
The only stage that was short, but it's technically not even really a stage, was Sky Sanctuary, because you're just going through some teleporters, and then that's basically it. And then you fight Knuckles.
You don't fight him in Sky Sanctuary. You don't fight him in Sky Sanctuary.
What am I thinking of, then? Maybe it's the level before that?
It's level before that. That's where you basically become friends. Hidden Palace Zone. That's where you
fight him. Yeah. Right.
And you basically have him, and that is a very short zone, but that's a story zone. That's basically there just to kind of say, this is where the Master Emerald is, this is where the Mega Chaos Emeralds are, and then you fight Knuckles, and then he basically lets you into the Sky Sanctuary Zone. So that's where it's like, oh, cool. But then that deviates. Again, that deviates whether you're Sonic or Knuckles.
Yeah, so I played this through just doing Sonic. I did not play the game through as Knuckles. Did you do both?
Yes, you need to do both. They have a completely different time.
All right, go ahead. Explain it.
Oh my God. Right. So doing it as Sonic is probably the canon. That's the canon story. But Knuckles has his own story where basically you fight the same bosses as well as you do with Sonic. Except the difference is rather than fighting Robotnik, you're fighting like a robot Badnik version of him. And Knuckles will go into his own parts of the map. So definitely in Mushroom Hill Zone, there's a point definitely in the second stage where Sonic suddenly just, you see these rocks and you go, oh, they could be broken, but you realize they can't as Sonic, and then Knuckles will just push and break through them. And then there's a section of the zone which is only accessible to him. Only he can play around in that zone. So it's basically designed completely for him. And then from that point, the rest of Sonic's one is built just for him and Tails. And they do that throughout the game. There's points where they can kind of separate and do their own thing. But when you get to the Sky Sanctuary Zone, the cool thing about that is, yes, Sonic's going on to the Death Egg. Well, not for Knuckles. Knuckles' story finishes there, where he fights basically Mechasonic Mark II. And he fights that, where that thing goes Super Sonic. It goes Super Saiyan and on the Emerald. So you have to fight that. But the Death Egg Zone and Doomsday Zone are Sonic only.
Yeah, and Doomsday Zone, in my opinion, and I don't know how you feel, probably the best stage in this game, only because it's basically a shmup in a lot of ways, except, you know, I mean, Sonic's not shooting anything out of his body or anything, but he's literally using his body, which I thought was a very interesting change in gameplay for this game.
It was the Doomsday Zone, I think, is one of the biggest amazing ways to top off the whole series. You know, the music, the way that you have to constantly get going as Supersonic or Hypersonic. And it is like an ultimate reward for those players. And the way it's built up, the way it's designed, again, it kind of does, it does feel like, holy shit, this is it. We are throwing everything at the player. We are throwing everything about. The tension is up. This is it. It's you versus Robotnik for the final time in your best forms you've got. And it was a perfect way, I thought, to finish off all four games, because they're a big story. Sonic 1 and Sonic 2, then Sonic 3 leads straight after Sonic 2. And it's a perfect way to wrap all these games up. It really is.
Yeah, I agree. It's like the perfect amount of escalation. You kind of mentioned the bosses, and then once we talk about this, we'll move on from the gameplay here. Bosses have never been the strong point in this franchise. But I did appreciate the callbacks to previous fights with the Metal Sonic fight at the end, where like he basically emulates some of the other more iconic boss fights throughout the series. Are there any other bosses that actually stand out to you?
Oh, well, definitely the final weapon, the Robotnik's final one. Like, I did love everything. Like, the final Robotnik ones in the Death Egg Zone and the Doomsday Zone were quite cool. I think Metal Sonic basically do the iconic battles are quite cool, but it's the battle's definitely cooler as Knuckles. So you're fighting the Super Saiyan version of it is so cool. I think the only other one that I liked was, I liked the Egg Scrambler. I thought the Egg Scrambler was so much fun, as he's basically just cutting down trees to get hold of you. I was like, that's so much fun. And you basically, it's an obstacle course. The one which pissed me off the most, oh my God, it was a mid-stage boss in Sandopolis. And it pissed me off for the wrong reasons. So it didn't piss me off playing as Sonic and Knuckles. It doesn't piss me off in that, because the idea is basically this golem thing's walking towards you. And you can't really, you kind of have to knock it into a sand pit behind you. So you have to wait till it gets towards you. Then you jump over it and then you can hit it in. It's not a problem. You know, it quite makes sense with Sonic and Knuckles. However, when you're doing it with Tails, and if you've got his hyper form by that point, which means he's Super Tails, and you've got the flickies all coming round, the flickies will automatically go after this golem. And there's nothing you can do. They will automatically go after it, even though they're actually slowing the thing down. So if you've got 200 rings, you have to wait for all those rings to disappear before you can actually even do the boss. It's like, oh, for fuck's sake. So you want to say to the flickies, stop. Stop attacking him. You're not doing what you're meant to do.
And then hope you don't get hit.
Then, yeah, you have to wait till you get to zero, because otherwise you can't do it. The flickies make it impossible. It's like the guy goes up like an inch and then the flicky's like, fuck, kill him! No, flicky, stop! Stop, flicky! What are you doing? Stop it!
I think the golem boss was the second time I ran out of time, because I had no idea how I was supposed to fight that fucking thing. I had no idea you had to push him into the pit.
Gaming brain, there's a sand pit behind. Come on. This is gaming.
I didn't see it. I did not see it.
What do you mean you didn't see it? What do you mean you didn't
when
see
it? When he comes
it?
Out of the pyramid or whatever, you don't see it unless you move all the way to the left side of the screen. I didn't know it was there.
Yes, survey your surroundings. That's gaming 101. See what's there. See what if there's anything. Oh my God. Oh.
Danny, maybe when you go into the boss arena, the game should have, maybe you should have came from that direction and have saw the sand pit on your way in, instead of just, I think you just drop into it from the top.
This is a you problem. This is not the game's fault.
No, this is the game's
problem.
Fault.
No, this is a you problem. This is definitely a you problem. It's an issue.
Are you saying this is a skill issue?
You ran out of time. And then
I ran out of time hitting this motherfucker over and over and over again. I'm like, am I doing any damage?
No. The boss is laughing his head off. You can imagine that. Your Robotnik's going, well, fucking hell, this is taking a long time. Where is he? He should be here by now. No, he's dicking around in some pyramid.
This game. I'm looking at my notes. The notes I have left. And I was bringing back a fan favorite game and I can't even do it. And it's not like there's going to be, like, this isn't the last Sonic episode, right? So I can just pull this out. Like, the game's already done. I don't even have to think about it. Which is great, because it's one of the harder games to put together. But anyway, on to the graphics. You're not going to hear a lot of complaints from me about the graphics here. I think all of the Sonic games look fantastic, and this isn't any different. The one thing I noticed about this game that separates it from even Sonic 3 is all the little atmospheric flourishes to the game. Like the inclusion of leaves kicking up behind Sonic in Act 2 of Mushroom Hill Zone, the heat waves, and the depth conveyed in the background of Sandopolis. The entire reveal of the Death Egg, which is like from the ending of Sonic 3, it collapses into like the side of a mountain or a volcano or something. And as you're diving in deeper and deeper into this volcano, you just see the Death Egg embedded into the side of it. And it's a really cool reveal. It's done very, very well. There's a lot of cool imagery in this game that, again, to my point earlier, really kind of helps the story along in the game. But I do have two nitpicks. Well, I guess one of them is a nitpick. The other one's just, I guess, an observation. The nitpick is that I still just don't like Sonic Sprite. It's the exact same sprite from Sonic 3. And there's nothing wrong with it. It looks really good. But, like, I still just prefer that chunkier, more stout Sonic the Hedgehog than the tall, lanky Sonic that we have now. And I might have brought this up in my Sonic 3 episode, I'm not sure. But the first two games had this cubist modern art aesthetic that, in my opinion, really defines those games, really set them apart from a lot of the aesthetics of the games that came before it and that are contemporaneous with that game. And with Sonic and Knuckles, they went with something a little more down to earth and a little more realistic. And maybe it comes down to the setting, right? This game doesn't take place on, is it Morbius? Like, those first two games take place on Sonic's planet, I think. Is it Morbius? I don't know. Wherever Sonic is from, that's where those first two games take place. And I think with Sonic 3 and, of course, Sonic and Knuckles, having just kind of, you know, it still looks very good. Don't get me wrong. I'm not knocking the graphics. Again, this is just kind of like a little bit of a nitpick, a little bit of an observation, having looked at all four of these games, having played them. There's just something a little, I don't want to say generic about the setting, but it's just a little more realistic, for lack of a better term. I feel like between Sonic and 3 and Sonic and Knuckles, by changing its aesthetic, the setting lost a little bit of character that those first two games had. And then the other thing I didn't particularly get on with this game is the music. The soundtrack, I don't think the soundtrack is that great. Flying Battery Zone is really good. That's a banger. Coincidentally, Danny uses the music from Flying Battery Zone in his podcast. But that's like really it. Like, they got rid of the sub-boss music from Sonic 3. And now the songs for both the sub-bosses and the main bosses sound nearly identical. Like, this is a huge step down from 3. I think the soundtrack for Sonic and Knuckles is a step down from Sonic 3. And overall, the weakest in the franchise that I have covered so far. And that could be due to a number of things. I mean, when you've got Michael Jackson making songs for you on the previous game, things are going to sound a little bit different the next time around. It's just too bad that none of that stuff transferred over to this game. And again, it's just that, it's that thing I talked about on the Sonic 3 episode where it's like Sega plays very coy about who made the music for Sonic 3. And it's one of those things where it's like, well, shouldn't that stuff carry over into Sonic and Knuckles since it's the same game? But the music is completely different. Now, I don't know if the music transfers over if you lock both games together at the same time. Playing Sonic and Knuckles just by itself, I just think, yeah, overall, I think it's pretty disappointing. Especially considering the one thing I look forward to when I play the Sonic games is its soundtrack. And this just didn't do it for me. Just didn't do it for me. It's good. It is really good. But, like, it's just not memorable. Oh, and they changed Knuckles' theme. His theme is different for some reason. Again, the changing of the music. Like, Michael Jackson definitely worked on Sonic 3. There's, like, no other way around it. Like, why is the music different? Now that we're done with presentation, the only thing left to do here is to see if I would recommend checking out Sonic and Knuckles in 2023. And man, I'm sorry, Danny. I feel like Sonic and Knuckles is one step forward, two steps back. Sonic and Knuckles, on its own, by itself, as a single game, sucks. And maybe it's because Sonic 3 was so good, I came into this being very optimistic. More optimistic than I would be about any other Sonic game. Now, I feel like Sonic and Knuckles definitely isn't the worst in the series. But if anyone came to me and told me that it wasn't, that it was the best, I guess I would kind of be like, yeah, all right, I guess so. I don't know. I don't feel like, I don't hear a lot of huge arguments for Sonic and Knuckles. Like, to me, Sonic 3 felt like one fluid experience outside of the cut stage, which was Flying Battery Zone. Everything seemed to flow very well together. Everything made sense. Everything about Sonic and Knuckles feels oddly disjointed until the end of the game. And the levels are just overly bloated, in my opinion. And they rely way too much on gimmicks to keep things interesting, whereas that really wasn't a problem in Sonic 3. On its own, I think Sonic and Knuckles is bad. And with Sonic 3 attached to it, then I feel like the last half of Sonic 3 becomes bad and is a worse game, in my opinion. Sonic and Knuckles make Sonic 3 bad. If development had gone smoothly for these games and it came out as intended, I feel like Sonic 3 would start strong and end horribly. And you would also end up with a game that's just way too fucking long. So would I recommend Sonic and Knuckles? I'm going to go with a light not recommend. It's not something I think anybody should stay away from, but it's not great. It really isn't. Sorry, there's no counterpoint. The voice of reason has left the room. It's only you and me. And I think Sonic and Knuckles kind of sucks. So that's going to do it for this episode. Future Keith swiftly flying in here. So what do we got going on next week? Well, 2 weeks from now, actually. We're doing every other week, right? New schedule. New schedule, new me. We're heading back to licensed game territory. Feels like it's been a while. I guess I just did X-Men 2, right? So it hasn't been that long. But we're going back to a license that has had a rough start on the NES with me, with some previous games. We're talking about Disney, which means we're talking about Castle of Illusion, starring Mickey Mouse. So until then, I hope you guys take care of yourselves, and always remember, it's okay to like a video game.
He said bad words on the Main Quest podcast.